loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by co-host John Kiriakou. The highly anticipated so-called Nunes memo was released today, showing what appears to be a serious abuse of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, to conduct surveillance on the Trump campaign, or at least some members of it, during the 2016 election, based solely, it appears, on an opposition research dossier prepared by former British spy Christopher Steele. We're joined from Baltimore by Kevin Zeis. He is the co-coordinator of PopularResistance.org. You can check out their work at Popular Resistance website. We're joined also from Pittsburgh by Dan Kovalik. He is a human rights and labor lawyer who is the author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. Welcome, Kevin and Dan.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Dan Kovalik, of course, this has dominated the news for the last week. You had the House Republicans, Nunes, and the committee insisting that the memo that they developed based on materials that we don't yet have access to and maybe never will have access to. They wanted to make this public. Donald Trump wanted to make it public. He finally declassified it, cleared it for release, and now it has been released. The Democrats are screaming and have been screaming all week that if this dossier came out, the sky would in fact be falling. What's your take on what it says? I mean, what is it? What do we learn here?
Well, we learn that the FBI appears to have begun to have gotten a FISA warrant to surveil the Trump campaign, largely based on this Steele dossier, Steele being a former agent of MI6, and that he was paid $160,000 by the DNC to compile this information. And he went to the FBI, who then got a warrant to secretly surveil, a campaign of a presidential candidate, which, again, none of us are fans of that particular candidate. But I think there's a huge question whether the FISA courts even appropriately issued the warrant in light of, frankly, the little information they had.
Let's get Kevin Zeis on it. Kevin, what's your take?
Well, it's not all that clear to me on a number of things. First, looks like the warrant was for surveilling Carter Page, who at one point was a volunteer advisor to the Trump campaign. But they had a breaking when there was an article by Michael Isikoff in Yahoo News about Page being investigated for his Russia ties. And there was a big public break between Carter Page and the Trump campaign. And it's after that this warrant was issued. So I'm not clear they were surveilling the Trump campaign or Carter Page. And, of course, the big dispute is, was it all based on this Steele memo, which was funded by the Clinton campaign at that point, had been funded earlier by Republicans, then funded by the Clinton campaign. Was there other information in the warrant request? We don't really know. The Democrat response to this has been suppressed, so we don't know what the Democrat version is. The FBI has been saying that there's material information left out of this Nunes memo. We don't know what that is yet. So I think there's a lot more shoes to drop in this. And I have a feeling that Trump and the Republicans taking on the FBI is going to have a blowback they don't expect. It looks like this is designed, to me, to get rid of Rod Rosenstein, who's the Department of the Attorney General deputy who is in charge of the Mueller investigation. Rosenstein was mentioned as one of those who signed off on these FISA warrants, a later stage one. Rosenstein was appointed to the Department of Justice AG position in March, and that's when he approved continuing the investigation into Carter Page. So looks like they're trying to get rid of Rosenstein, who's the one who can fire Mueller.
All right. I want to go through the memo itself, John Kiriakou, and then have you and have the other folks on the line here Kevin Zeese and Dan Kovalik take a look at it and try to help the audience actually understand what this means. And I'm going to read from it. Investigation update. On October 21st, 2016, the Department of Justice and FBI sought and received a FISA probable cause order, not under Title VII, authorizing electronic surveillance on Carter Page from the Foreign Intelligence Court. Page is a U.S. citizen who served as a volunteer advisor to the Trump presidential campaign. Consistent with requirements under FISA, the application had to be first certified by the director or deputy director of the FBI. It then required the approval of the attorney general, deputy attorney general, or the Senate-confirmed assistant attorney general for the National Security Division. The FBI and DOJ obtained one initial FISA warrant targeting Carter Page and three FISA renewals from the court. As required by statute, and then it names the statute, a FISA order on an American citizen must be renewed by the court every 90 days, and each renewal requires a separate finding of probable cause. Then Director James Comey signed three FISA applications in question on behalf of the FBI, and Deputy Director Andrew McCabe signed one. McCabe is the person who resigned yesterday. And then the DAG, Sally Yates, then acting DAG, and they make some other, list some other names, and Rod Rosenstein each signed one or more FISA application on behalf of DOJ. So what does that mean? That means that the FBI and the Department of Justice is going to the Foreign Intelligence Court seeking a warrant to spy on Carter Page, a volunteer in the Trump campaign. This is in October and then October 2016 and then renewed. And they say that there's a probable cause to do this and they base it, but they don't apparently tell the court that it's based on research opposition documents, the Steele dossier, that were paid for by a law firm and the Fusion GPS that were hired, the employee of the Democratic National Committee. And because they want to prove that they have more than one source than the Steele dossier, the infamous Steele dossier, they also cite the fact that it was in a Yahoo News article written by Michael Isikoff. But where did Michael Isikoff get the story about this thing? He got it from none other than Christopher Steele. So it's not a corroboration. It only appears to be a corroboration.
It's circular reporting.
Circular reporting.
It's Christopher Steele placing the information in two different places to make people believe that it's coming from two different sources.
And so then you have Andrew McCabe, Rosenstein, and James Comey going to the FISA court saying it's justified to carry out the spying on Carter Page. And they don't tell the court that it's really based on opposition research paid by the Democratic National Committee. I mean, that in itself is really what the Republicans hope to be the explosive piece of information here, right?
And don't forget also that, you know, we're talking about people like Sally Yates and Andrew McCabe, et cetera. These are all Obama appointees who were either holdovers into the Trump administration or promoted once Trump became president.
Right.
Career DOJ officials.
Okay, Dan, again, that looks like an abuse of FISA. We were trying to look before the show. What's the penalty for lying, that is either by commission or omission to a FISA judge in order to get a warrant? And I'm quite sure the FBI does this pretty routinely because the FISA court isn't an adversarial proceeding. The judge doesn't know and doesn't have a way to know, doesn't take cross testimony from others who would challenge the FBI assertions. This probably goes on all the time. But in this case, the Republicans are pointing out it was going against the Republican campaign of Donald Trump. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, well, I think there could be some real blowback here as a result of what you said. And that is that the FISA court may actually have been, as you say, by omission misled about what information they were relying upon to issue this warrant. Now, as you say, it's an ex parte proceeding, so there's no one on the other side arguing against the issuance of the warrant. As you say, it probably happens all the time. But anytime you misrepresent something to any federal entity, including a FISA court, there's issues of perjury. You know, people could be indicted or go to jail because of this. And I'm sure there will be people pushing for that at this point.
Kevin Zeese, I thought the FBI was above the law. What's going on here?
Well, I'd say we're only hearing the Republican version of events. And so I have a feeling there's a lot of more we're not being told. And I look forward to hearing the Democrat version, the FBI version, and seeing if there is more balance to this.
Well, let me just jump in then. But you said the Democrat response was suppressed. Is it suppressed or I wasn't aware of it being suppressed? How is it suppressed?
They voted party line not to release that, and so now they got to fight about that. The other thing that's interesting about what you read was of those five names that were mentioned who signed off on these various warrants, the first one and the renewals, Comey's been fired. Andrew McCabe resigned. Sally Yates, who was one who opposed the travel ban, she was fired. Dana Boente is now with the FBI general counsel. She left that position as of the Department of Justice. The only one left is Rod Rosenstein. That's the only one left.
And Rod Rosenstein, after Jeff Sessions recused himself at the beginning of this process
as the
deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, he is Robert Mueller's boss.
Exactly.
So if he's implicated here for being involved in a FISA abuse, and the Republicans are clearly going in that direction, and if he's fired, that means that Donald Trump or the Trump White House appoints a new deputy attorney general, correct?
Who would then have the power to fire Mueller. And Mueller reports to Rosenstein. Rosenstein can fire him, but Mueller reports to him and decides whether to follow Mueller's recommendations. And Rosenstein then reports to Congress on whatever Mueller found. And so Rosenstein's like the pivotal guy in this whole Mueller investigation. Right now, he'd be the one that could fire Mueller. And if he's replaced by a Trump appointee, then you have a Saturday Night Massacre scenario where Trump appoints someone who could fire Mueller.
And, you know, I would note, too, that just in the last couple of hours, a CNN reporter asked Trump, "Do you intend to fire Rosenstein?" And his response was, "You figure that out." So that tells me that Rod Rosenstein's not long for Washington.
Well, certainly Donald Trump doesn't want him to be long for Washington, but just think of what the political fallout would be if Trump goes ahead and fires through a replacement of Rod Rosenstein, Mueller.
Sure, it would be a disaster. It would be like the Friday Night Massacre in 73.
Yeah. It would be like firing James Comey plus 100.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that the Republicans have made very good use of this propaganda, which is really what the memo is. It's propaganda and the press leading up to the release of this memo. If the president were then to fire Rosenstein with an eye toward the replacement firing Mueller, I think that would turn completely around. And I think the country would just be up in arms.
Right now, right now, Dan Kovalik, when I think most people read this memo and they see, and it's pretty obvious, even though as Kevin said, we don't have all the information. We certainly don't have the Democratic Party's version of it. But when most people read this memo, they're going to think, okay, this is an abuse of FISA by people who are politically opposed to Donald Trump, because all of those people that we've mentioned are, in fact, or most of them were, in fact, opposed to Donald Trump's presidency. And so I think people will draw the conclusion that there was bias and thus an abuse of the FISA process. And two, the Democrats made too much out of this. Like, why did they go to the mat saying, don't release this? The whole national security apparatus of America hangs in the balance. In other words, the sky will be falling if we hear it. And weirdly, and I think this is really weird, all the people who are considered progressives, maybe within the Democratic Party, who have for years sort of chastised the House Oversight Committees for being nothing more than a fig leaf for the FBI and the CIA and the NSA, they've been telling people, put your hands over your ears, put your hands over your eyes, don't hear it, don't see it. Like, we can't let the country know about the terrible revelations that will be forthcoming. And thus actually go along with the FBI narrative that all of these, quote, secrets and secret doings within FISA or within the 702, a part of FISA, all of that should be maintained, sustained, and supported. I mean, it's really weird. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, yeah, it is. It is very weird, and I think that's the weirdest part. I mean, you really do see a switch of who's defending the FBI here and who's attacking them. Again, the Republicans tend to be more defensive of the intelligence agencies, and at least liberal Democrats more critical of them. But in this case, you see this role reversal. Yeah, I listened to NPR this morning, and they were just, you know, beside themselves that somehow the FBI was being attacked here for its methods, when we know that its methods are terrible, you know, that they've undermined peace groups and political dissident groups by infiltrating them and sometimes, you know, murdering people. Fred Hampton comes to mind, for example, the Black Panther leader. I mean, we should welcome that the FBI is being challenged here. You know, we may not be happy it's Trump doing it or the Republicans, but the fact is they've gotten away with too much for too long, and I think it's good that they're being challenged. But, you know, now the Democrats are panicking about it. And as you say, there's really nothing in here that I see that's going to somehow expose, again, the FBI's critical intelligence gathering methods or capabilities, which is usually what folks are concerned about. It just raises questions about whether they did the right thing here. And I think those questions are fair game.
I think that's an important point. And we've said this before. Let's say it again. You don't have to love Donald Trump to think that the FBI is a corrupt and overreaching organization. You don't have to love and support Donald Trump to think that the FBI committed crimes.
You can detest Donald Trump and everything he stands for, in fact.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what's bizarre about this, though, you know, Mueller has a terrible history as FBI director of spying on citizen groups. He's not someone that anyone wants to defend. Comey also. This is not a group. I mean, in fact, you look at this list of the people involved in this. As far as I know, they're all Republicans. I don't know about Sally Yates. Otherwise, they're all Republicans. And so that's bizarre. And when you think about the election campaign, well, first off, the warrant was for Carter Page, not the Trump campaign.
Right.
And it was after Carter Page was separated from the Trump campaign. So I'm not even sure this was an investigation of a campaign. So I'd like to know more about what Carter Page and the Trump campaign were doing after October, after this warrant, to see if there even was any contacts. I'm not sure there were. But beyond that, I mean, think about the election campaign. James Comey made this very bizarre, long, anti-Hillary Clinton speech when he decided not to prosecute her, a really bizarre anti-Hillary Clinton speech that said she did all sorts of ethical violations and stuff. And then a few days before the election, he announces they're reopening the investigation into Hillary a few days before the campaign's over. When that was going on, my reaction was, what the hell is Comey doing? He's like taking sides in this campaign against Hillary Clinton. It's very strange behavior. And so now we have this opposite situation where the FBI is essentially being accused by the Republicans of trying to undermine Trump. And so this is like so many confusing, inconsistent activities going on that I have a very hard time dissecting this without more information.
Well, I want to get into some of that timeline and try to discern and understand what James Comey was doing, because I think some of the facts that are now coming out make it sort of discernible what may have been motivating Comey on July 5th, 2016, when he had that press conference where he basically chastised Hillary Clinton. This was 2 days after she was interviewed, said that her handling of State Department emails was careless or extremely careless, but not criminally negligent. And then later, 11 days before the election, he comes out again and announces, we're going to reopen the Hillary Clinton email investigation, which Hillary Clinton then blamed for her loss. We're going to talk about that in our second half. But I want to go and stay right in the beginning part with the question of where this all comes from and also the issue of FISA abuse. The Justice Department Inspector General's Office declassified a report in 2015 that reveals that the internal watchdog had concerns as early as 2012 that the FBI was submitting, quote, deficient reports, indicating it had a clean record complying with spy data gathered on Americans without a warrant. Now, that was back then.
Yes.
Like, that's a big story. This is about FISA and the FBI using FISA court as an abuse against the American people.
And this is a court in which no American has any way to defend himself.
A secret court.
It's a secret court.
You don't get a lawyer. You don't get to face your accuser.
You don't even know you're being accused.
You have no idea. And they're getting a warrant to surveil you about everything, to watch your every step, your every move. And they do that to a lot of people. And now, even according to their own very broad, almost non-restriction regime, they still have violated that, according to the internal report. That's an issue here. And we have, just in the last weeks, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in Congress voting almost across the board to give the FBI and FISA, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA more power or continued power, even though it has this pattern of abuse. So now you have the Republicans saying, look, the FISA process was abused by the FBI. Well, you just voted to give them more authority. And the Democrats, likewise, who have been, you know, complaining for a long time about this, that, or the other thing about Donald Trump, just said, because he's the president of the country, yeah, he should have this authority. I mean, what about that? I mean, Dan Kovalik, it seems to me that the fundamental issue of the national surveillance state, the abuse of the people by these spy agencies with the FISA court and the abuse thereof is the big issue. And both the Democrats and the Republicans, Trump and his opponents, are equally culpable in terms of maintaining, not bringing that regime apart. Go ahead.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think time and time again, you see it with the Patriot Act and the renewal of the Patriot Act, that it's a bipartisan issue to clamp down, frankly, on dissent in this country and to use our intelligence services to do that. You know, in an analogous way, you know, both parties also, including the Democratic Party, who thinks, and maybe rightfully, that Trump is unhinged, you know, they give him all the military aid he asked for, and sometimes more than he asked for, and allows him to conduct any war he wants to at any time. It is this very strange thing that, you know, we are led to have almost unquestioning faith in our intelligence services, in our military, when in fact they do not seem to be advancing national security interest, if national security means, you know, securing you and I, you know, if it means securing our oil, maybe that's something different. But I think all these things are up for grabs and up for questioning. And yet, as you say, neither party wants to question them.
During the Barack Obama administration, starting as early as 2011, Obama relax the requirements on the government for the ability to collect surveillance data and review it and maintain that system, again, using the FISA court and including information gleaned from so-called surveillance of people in other countries. Dozens of times in 2016, those kind of intelligence reports from NSA or CIA or FBI identifying Americans that these are communications directly intercepted talking to foreign sources. Again, this is relevant to our discussion here, or were the subject of conversations between two or more monitored foreign figures. Obama and his team were routinely reviewing those communications themselves, including people in the Trump campaign. We know this from Freedom of Information requests that have been released. Those people who were reviewing NSA-based intelligence reports about U.S. citizens included Susan Rice, that's Obama's national security advisor, John Brennan, and then Attorney General Loretta Lynch. I mean, this is what's been going on with the Democrats. And again, I want to make the point before we go to break and before we come back to the genesis of this whole Russiagate thing, the Republicans and the Democrats are twins. They are both embracing this regime, which is systematic abuse. Go ahead, Kevin. We have 45 seconds.
Totally right. The previous comments, I think, are on point. We need to be questioning this whole FISA process, the idea of a secret court. Where is that in the Constitution?
Amen.
What's the justification for secret courts to spy on U.S. citizens? Sorry, I just don't see that. That should really be questioned and, I think, withdrawn. And, you know, you have to wonder what kind of information does the NSA, the FBI, the intelligence agencies have on members of Congress to have such strong bipartisan support where no one questions these abuses? They can destroy tapes that a court says, keep those tapes. We want to be able to review those. Destroy. Oh, sorry, we destroyed them. No response. No concern. So you have to wonder what's going on with these intelligence agencies and their control over members of Congress and probably people in the White House.
Indeed. So, Congress people come and go. Presidents come and go. But then you have the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the National Surveillance State. Maybe that's the real power. Maybe that's the essence of so-called our democracy.
The deep state is real.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break, John, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Loud and clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker.
And I'm John Kiriakou.
We're talking for the full hour in this hour about the release of the highly anticipated Nunes memo. We're talking with Kevin Zeese. He is the co-coordinator of the Popular Resistance. PopularResistance.org is the website where you can read his writings and the writings of other people with the organization. We're joined from Pittsburgh by Dan Kovalik. He's a human rights and labor lawyer. He's the author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. Before we went to break, John, I said we wanted to get back to the genesis, and I do want to get back to the genesis of the whole Russiagate thing, because I think it's all tied up here, and we want to look at the role of the Steele dossier, the role of the FBI. Of course, people are bouncing off of headlines, and some of the headlines, well, I would say most of the headlines are just downright misleading. They leave an impression.
I agree.
But let's, before we do that, start with some words from the former FBI director, James Comey.
Yeah, James Comey, who is now, at least among Democrats, somehow acknowledged as some sort of a senior statesman.
I thought he was the reason Hillary Clinton lost. Wait a second.
Right. That was only for a little while.
Oh, okay.
Now he and John Brennan and Mike Hayden are really the people that we ought to be aspiring to.
Our champions.
So James Comey just tweeted this, quote, "That's it? Question mark. Dishonest and misleading memo wrecked the House Intel Committee. Destroyed trust with the intelligence community, damaged relationship with FISA court, and inexcusably exposed classified investigation of an American citizen. For what? DOJ and FBI must keep doing their jobs," unquote.
Okay. Kevin Zeese, you want to react to FBI director, your leader, James Comey?
I have to ask also, for what is right? You're investigating Carter Page after he's left the Trump campaign for his ties to Russia, which have been long known since back to the, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So big deal. What's the issue? And I don't understand the Democrats' response about this, all fear of these exposing methods of surveillance and secrecy. We're talking about the Steele memo. That's not a big secret.
That's the method. There's one method. There's one source. That's called Christopher Steele.
In a Yahoo News article.
Also really secretly authored. Even though Michael Isikoff is the author, it's really Christopher Steele.
Right, but so big deal. That's not a big secret method that the Democrats are fighting about. So, but on the other hand, now you have this whole Russiagate thing. Okay, should it continue? Should it have even started? I mean, the lack of proof on Russiagate, I think, is the first place to raise questions. But now we're getting into this obstruction of justice stuff, and Trump is implying he's going to fire Rod Rosenstein, which means that he's going to essentially file Mueller. Now we're getting the whole different fight. It's not about Russiagate anymore. Now it's about Trump just abusing his power as president to stop an investigation.
Well, that's what Watergate was, except perhaps there were underlying crimes. None have been proved in the case of the Russiagate. I want to go back and again help the audience, because I think people are just lost in this. And people have sort of switched sides. The Democrats are now the liberals are the champions of the FBI. And asserting that Russia's carrying out this, you know, terrible takeover of America. But I want to go back to where this all started. Christopher Steele was hired by Fusion GPS on and he was hired back in April 2016. Originally, it was the Republican rivals of Donald Trump who set this process into motion. And here's a sort of a commentary about what was going on. In April 2016, Mark Elias, a partner in the large Seattle-based firm Perkins Coie and head of its political law practice, hired Fusion GPS to do opposition research on Trump. Elias was the attorney of record for the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton presidential campaign. Now, that's April 2016, not I want people to remember this in terms of George Papadopoulos and when the FBI gets in on the act in July 2016. But this is April 2016. As part of their investigation, Fusion GPS hired Orbis Business Intelligence, a private British intelligence firm, to look into connections between Trump and Russia. Now, Christopher Steele said that they only told him one thing. Now, this is the DNC. This is research, opposition research. They had one question for him to research, and here it is. They gave me no specific marching orders, quote, beyond this basic question, why did Mr. Trump repeatedly seek to do deals in a notoriously corrupt police state that most serious investors shun? That was it? That's how this started. That's how this started. And when you think about it, business people are doing business in Russia from all over the world.
Constantly.
And whether you call it names and you use caricatured language, the notorious police state, corrupt, something that serious investors shun. I don't know who they are. Is that ExxonMobil? I thought ExxonMobil, they're serious investors. They were doing business there. But what about Saudi Arabia? What about all the other countries in the world where serious investors are also doing business? But from the beginning, this story was incentivized based on an effort by Donald Trump's political opponents. And thus, one cannot, if you look at the genesis of the campaign, say something other than this is a political campaign. It was a political campaign in search of facts. And when facts weren't available, they came up with unvetted data. And John Kiriakou, you've talked about this a lot. The Steele dossier, these 16, 17 memoranda, none of that material is vetted.
No, none of it. Literally none of it is vetted. And in any normal situation, none of that information would have even made its way to the principals. What happens is the information goes to...
So you're talking about if for FBI or CIA?
Correct.
Or
correct. It would go to a team of analysts, and the analysts would vet the information. And if it can't be vetted, it's dropped. It's ignored because it likely can't be trusted. But that's not what happened here. What happened here was that every rumor, every innuendo was taken as fact, and that's what was put forward.
Yeah, so Dan Kovalik, I mean, Christopher Steele is incentivized because he's a hired hand. He's not trying to come up with an FBI report about a target. He's just coming up with information that will make his client happy, and his client will be happy if he comes up with dirt against Donald Trump. And by the way, when you really think about this, Christopher Steele was working in Russia, a foreign agent, yeah. Christopher Steele, working in Russia, collecting data against a political rival running for president of the United States, Donald Trump. Wouldn't that be kind of meddling? I mean, using Russia to meddle in American elections?
Well, of course. Of course. And of course, there's a lot of interesting things to say here. I mean, first of all, you know, when we talk about corrupt police states, the United States comes to mind. It seems like the pot calling the kettle black here. But putting that aside, you know, the specter of Nixon, you know, was raised here. And I think you're going to hear a lot of comparisons to Nixon, again, possibly in terms of Trump's decision to ultimately get the Mueller investigation ended. But what really looks Nixonian to me here is, frankly, using the FBI, as they were here, to go after a political opponent. That's Nixonian. So it's the Obama administration and its FBI that is acting in ways that are inappropriate.
That's right.
And again, that do remind me of Nixon. And I think that that cannot be forgotten. And I think Democrats, whether they like Obama or not, have to be critical of that.
And again, and Kevin and John, too, if you want to jump in, I mean, we're talking about what the FISA the representations of the FISA court originally in October 2016, and then every 90 days it's renewed. But, you know, it was at that same time in October 2016 that the FBI actually reached an agreement with Steele to pay him to continue his work.
That's right.
I mean, he's hired by Republican rivals of Trump. Then Trump wins the nomination, so they stop paying him, or it looks like he's going to. The Fusion GPS and the Democratic National Committee, or the law firm working for them, representing him, they pick him up. And then in October of 2016, right before the election, James Comey, then director of FBI, asks says that he'll start to pay Christopher Steele, too, to be a part of the FBI, well, on the payroll. Is that normal, John?
No, that is not normal. The FBI normally does not pay for information. The CIA certainly does, but that's the nature of intelligence. The FBI is a law enforcement organization, and they don't pay for information because that is generally seen as sort of gumming up the works. This was unusual. This was not something that was in the normal course of FBI business. And Brian, I mentioned to you offline before we started this segment, I know Christopher Steele. I worked with Christopher Steele, and I don't recognize this Christopher Steele. This is not the guy that I knew 20 years ago.
Meaning what exactly?
He's such a far more respected and qualified law enforcement officer than this is making him look to be. It's as though he was either in over his head, or he had such a deep hatred of Donald Trump that he allowed that to get the better of him.
Yeah, well, that's a plausible motivation. I mean, you can look at Donald Trump and find a lot wrong with Donald Trump.
Sure.
Certainly, we have been foremost critics of Donald Trump.
Yes.
So that would be a plausible explanation for someone's motivation, in addition to the fact that he was getting paid lots of money to
six figures.
Now here we have Kevin. James Comey's led FBI was willing to pay Steele, but then they decided not to. And Steele, according to I'm going back to the Nunes memo here, Steele was suspended and then terminated as an FBI source for what the FBI defines as the most serious of violations, an unauthorized disclosure to the media of his relationship with the FBI in an October 30th, 2016 Mother Jones article by David Korn. Anyway, go ahead. Talk about that.
Wow. Boy, this whole Russiagate thing has so many different spins to it. And the desire of the intelligence community, the Pentagon, the FBI, to make sure they can control Donald Trump, I think really is a large part of what was going on with this whole Russiagate stuff. Beyond the Democrats trying not to admit they screwed up the election and had a terrible candidate, there's also this desire to make sure that this loose cannon president, who is talking about America first and working with Russia, you know, that they have to control him. And so I'm not surprised they wanted to continue to work with Steele until he, you know, got in trouble for talking to the media. But because Steele could have been helpful in controlling Donald Trump if he became president. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of this whole Mueller investigation is about. And they've not found very much on Russiagate. You know, a little bit of RT reporting on the presidential race. Wow, that's really unusual for a media outlet to report on a presidential race. Some Facebook and tweet advertising, half of which was after the election was already over. I mean, there's not much there so far. And so they're really pushing this. And Trump is now going to start pushing back.
And also, as they keep doing it, I was just looking at the polls today. Trump and the Republicans' polls are going up because I think actually the American people, one, don't care about this. I mean, maybe a small part of the population does, but most people are like, do I have a job? Do I have decent wages? Can I get my kids to a doctor? I mean, basic things like that. Anyway, I want to go back to the because we're spending this hour on the Nunes memo, I want to go back and read again from the memo, and then Dan Kovalik and Kevin, throw it back to you. Before and after Steele was terminated by the FBI, as a source, he maintained contact with the Department of Justice via then Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, a senior DOJ official who worked closely with Deputy Attorneys General Yates and later Rosenstein. Shortly after the election, the FBI began interviewing Orr, that's Deputy Attorney General Orr, documenting his communications with Steele. For example, in September 2016, Steele admitted to Orr his feelings against then-candidate Trump when Steele said, quote, he was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected and was passionate about him not being president, close quote. There is clear, this clear evidence of Steele's bias was recorded by Orr at the time and subsequently in official FBI files, but not reflected in any of Page's FISA applications. In other words, they were maybe citing Steele's research, but not saying Steele was politically opposed to Trump. But here's the next point, and I want people to really listen to it. During the same time period, Orr, that's Deputy Attorney General Orr's wife, was employed by Fusion GPS to assist in the cultivation of opposition research on Trump. Orr later provided the FBI with all of his wife's opposition research paid for by the DNC and Clinton campaign via Fusion GPS. The Orr's relationship with Steele and Fusion GPS was inexplicably concealed from the court. Now, again, we don't know if this is true. This is the Nunes memo. Maybe there's some disingenuous way this is being worded.
But it sounds pretty damning the way it's written.
All of it sounds plausible.
Sure.
Let's put it that way.
Sure.
All of it sounds plausible. And I can remember back at the time of the Democratic National Convention, remember when WikiLeaks released all those embarrassing emails about how the Democratic National Committee was twisting and turning the primary process so that Hillary Clinton would definitely defeat Bernie Sanders. And all these documents came out showing that the DNC was breaking its own rules. And what was the response of the Democratic Party officials? Don't read those documents. Don't read those emails because they came from the Russians. Put your hands over your ears. Put your hands over your eyes. Don't read them. And of course, people did read them. It doesn't work to tell people don't read the stuff. And then Deborah Wasserman Schultz had to resign. Donna Brazile, who became interim chairperson, who was also telling people don't read the emails. Then she had to step down because some of the emails showed that she was giving debate questions from CNN, where she was a commentator, in advance to Hillary Clinton. I mean, the idea that that there's political bias in Washington for one candidate over another, like, that's completely plausible. And and the response, don't listen to these emails, don't read them because they come from the wrong source. I just think a large part of the American population is not going to buy that. Go ahead, Dan Kovalik.
Yeah, well, I agree. I agree that it's my sense that people are getting pretty weary of the whole Russiagate investigation to begin with. I think this is just going to add to people's desire to have this thing over with. But the other thing that just comes to mind, again, when I think about this memo and think about what's happened, where, again, I do think the FBI is being used somehow, and the FISA courts are being used for political gain, in this case, by the DNC, and before that, apparently, by others in the Republican Party who didn't want Trump to win. You know, it just makes me very uneasy that this is happening. Again, we know that this has happened before, but one has to question, frankly, how democratic our system is when this is happening. And again, the irony of ironies is that, you know, the whole Russiagate narrative revolves around the claim that Russia somehow stole our democracy. I don't see a lot of democracy here to be stolen, to be honest.
That's so true.
Well, as I said earlier, it seems to me that this is whatever you call it, a representative democracy. We have an FBI-led state. I mean, the FBI is the dominant political power. The only thing that's happened here is there's a little, you know, sort of little glimmer where you get to see what the FBI does routinely. And as we talked about earlier, going to the FISA court, getting warrants against people, no corroboration really of the evidence, and then beginning mass or individualized surveillance against people that can ruin people's lives. People may not even know about it. I mean, that's the real thing. And again, going back, FISA was passed, again, the FISA powers and the FBI and NSA and CIA's ability to use the FISA court, all the Congress people voted for that, again, giving them more and more power. And what do you expect? We know that this goes on day in and day out, that the FBI is, in fact, a criminal enterprise. I mean, it functions like a criminal enterprise. Kevin Zeese, go ahead.
So true. And, the fact that the Deputy Attorney General's wife, Bruce Orr's wife, worked for Fusion GPS and was developing this opposition research, and that was kept from the court, that is pretty damning. That is pretty damning. But, of course, what's really important, I think, in this section you read going forward is the point they make that after Steele was terminated, Rod Rosenstein stayed in touch with close contact with him. Once again, Rosenstein's the target for Trump. This is about obstruction of justice, and it's going to be about getting rid of Rosenstein and getting rid of Mueller. That's what this memo is really designed to accomplish. The issues that we're concerned with about FBI abuse, about the FISA court abuse, about intelligence gathering on individuals, that is bipartisan support. That's not going to be part of the narrative discussed between the Republicans and Democrats. What will be discussed is what happens to Rod Rosenstein, what happens to the Russiagate investigation. And this you can, as you go through this memo, you see his name coming up over and over because that's going to be used by Trump to get rid of Rosenstein.
I have to agree. I can't imagine that Rod Rosenstein survives another week in this administration. I think probably what he should be worried about is whether the Republicans are going to now demand that the Justice Department look at him for obstructing justice.
And then and then you're going to have the Democrats and a lot of the liberals rallying behind Rod Rosenstein, like they rallied behind James Comey, as if
these people are the guardians
of freedom and the guardians of democracy. And that would mean the so-called resistance to Trump under these circumstances would not just be irrelevant. It would be actually reactionary. I mean, it would be more reactionary than the reactionaries, because one, it's designed to enhance confrontation with Russia, but maybe even more importantly, it would be to allow the FBI to aggregate to itself even greater power. If the liberals in America are the ones who are saying the FBI, in fact, under these circumstances, is the champion or the guardian of, quote, our democracy, that's a blank check for the FBI to step it up against people all over the country. Dan Kovalik.
Yeah, well, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, the so-called resistance in many ways has become reactionary for the reasons you say, not only because, again, they seem to now have this unquestioning faith in the FBI and the CIA, but also are pushing, it seems to me, or at least some elements of it, are pushing for more military confrontations around the world, particularly with Russia. And, you know, this has just gone insane. The whole Russiagate scandal has just been, to me, so devastating for this country, and it could turn out for the rest of the world. And, again, it's a shame that people who otherwise have good politics are the ones that seem to be pushing this.
So true.
Yeah. So here we have a situation where, let's say, I mean, I don't really know if Trump is going to fire Rosenstein. Maybe he would. I think that if that happens, we're going into a period of political destabilization unlike anything that's been seen in the United States since 1973, 1974.
Agreed.
I mean, in which case you had the president of the United States at that time, well, Spiro Agnew was indicted. He resigned. Richard Nixon resigned rather than be impeached. And then, of course, you had unelected people taking the helm. But I think it would be a grave mistake on the part of Trump politically, tactically, if he were to do that.
Yeah, there would be tremendous blowback to that. And he would be risking his whole, you know, the only thing that will save him will be a big war. And unfortunately, we have the United States has very many irons in the fire when it comes to the potential for a big war. And this new national defense strategy that the Trump administration announced, moving from stopping terrorism to fighting with to competing with the great powers, that is a very dangerous direction that the military is taking. And I can see that the fear of Trump being indicted and his downward poll numbers, the fear of the wave coming in from the blue Democrat in 2018, all of this is pushing us toward a very dangerous foreign policy.
But do you think he actually understands that? Do you think he understands the consequences of some of these actions? He doesn't seem to understand the consequences of the things that he says. But do you think he would understand the fallout that he would encounter if he were to fire Mueller?
Mm.
Kevin?
He's certainly being told that by everyone, like from Lindsey Graham to, of course, all the Democrats. And even Paul Ryan is, wary of that. So he's definitely hearing it from people. But I think if he sees obstruction of justice, a potential indictment coming, which is not hasn't been done to a president before, but that could come. If he sees that coming, I think it may be more important to get rid of the person who's threatening him.
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, the thing that will work, I think, right now for Trump, is that the Democrats look foolish, it seems to me, maybe not to the diehard core supporters of the Democratic Party. But the Nunes memo doesn't mean the whole world is shaking. It doesn't mean that the FBI, as James Comey has said, is sort of now like rendered a helpless giant. Its sources and methods, in this case, there was one, Christopher Steele, have been revealed. None of that is true. What public opinion could turn weirdly towards Trump if people actually feel this is much ado about nothing. Of course, if Mueller ends up getting indictments for Trump or Manafort, as he's going for, on financial impropriety, corruption, tax evasion, all those other things that so many capitalists do, because that's just what they do, then, of course, that would be something else entirely. But that's not really about the Russia story, because, again, the Russia story, if proved true, would be a bombshell. But the fact that 18 months later, we don't have any specific, practical, hard evidence, I'm just doubting. Dan Kovalik, we have 40 seconds left. You get the last word.
Well, I think that, look, in the end, if the upshot is that the Russiagate investigation either ends or goes nowhere, I'd be happy about that. And if the upshot is that people have less faith in the intelligence services of the U.S., I'd be happy about that, too. So that's where I'll end.
All right. We're gonna leave it right there. That might be the unintended consequence if people become more skeptical and more cynical about the national surveillance state, the FBI, especially, and the power that it wields inside the United States. It's a tragedy, I think, that people who consider themselves progressives are rallying behind James Comey or Mueller, the former FBI director, or Rod Rosenstein, or any of these people, or that institution, which has done so much to criminalize dissent. I mean, they attack Martin Luther King. They attack the left. They've taken whistleblowers like you, John Kiriakou. They set up a John Kiriakou task force, and you went to prison. I mean, it's just a tragedy that people who call themselves progressives could actually be rallying behind the FBI. Anyway, we're out of time. We've been joined from Baltimore by Kevin Zeese. He's the co-coordinator of Popular Resistance. You can read his work at popularresistance.org. And we've been joined from Pittsburgh by Dan Kovalik, a human rights and labor lawyer who is the author of The Plot to Scapegoat Russia. After a short break, we'll be right back.
Loud and clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.